Hello and welcome to another day here at the Damage Report following a Super Tuesday that was a little bit less than super. And I wake up this morning to find out, did you know they're delaying the next Bond movie from April to November? As if I haven't suffered enough over the past 24 hours. Thanks, America. But anyway, one thing we do have going for us is J.R. Jackson's back in studio. It is J.R. Wednesday, after all.
That's the big news of Wednesday, is the James Bond movie that I didn't know existed.
That was the one thing I was looking forward to, that movie.
Haven't they made 72 of these movies?
Yeah.
Aren't they all the same?
They're similar.
I mean, okay.
This one has a script co-written by Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
I don't know.
And it has Ana de Armas.
Never heard of either one. Never heard of that guy.
Where am I? Anyway.
I can't. I don't have too much ground to stand on. I'll watch every Back to the Future movie. I'll watch every Rocky movie, and they're all different to me.
But that's true. All
including boxing. Every Rocky movie has some fake boxing.
That's true.
I get it, but.
That's true. I love that your reference to a series you watch is Back to the Future, which hasn't had a new movie in 32 years.
That's what makes it even worse that I will still watch it.
I will still watch it. It's a great series. They should make another one. Anyway, look, we've got a lot more Bond talk for you. No, we're gonna talk about Super Tuesday and much more. We've got some changes in the race, people dropping out, some people perhaps on the cusp of dropping out. And then for two blocks, for the first time ever on the Damage Report, Benjamin Dixon is gonna be joining us to talk about Mike Bloomberg, a guy he's got a problem with, I'll say, and also where this race is likely to go. Then we've got a couple more things I think we can take away from Super Tuesday, some good, some bad. And we're gonna touch base with a character we have not talked about much recently, Jeff Sessions. How's he doing? So anyway, before all of that, let's jump into the big developments coming out of yesterday. Down goes Bloomberg after what is electorally a disastrous Super Tuesday, if not in terms of his actual strategy for the race. Mike Bloomberg tweeted this, 3 months ago I entered the race to defeat Donald Trump. Today I'm leaving for the same reason. Defeating Trump starts with uniting behind the candidate with the best shot to do it. It's clear that is my friend and a great American, Joe Biden. So he's out and simultaneously lining up behind Joe Biden.
I don't know. Surprising few
at this point, I think.
Yeah, and not that anyone would ever do this, but it's almost one of those endorsements you don't want.
So, he wants it.
Yeah, he wants it, but honestly.
Do you know why he wants it?
Well, he wants the small group of voters that actually voted for Mike Bloomberg and bought into all the ads that he was running.
I think that's part of it. Uh-huh. I think what Joe Biden wants is $750 million in ads over the course of the next 2 months.
That's the obvious part.
The voters matter too. And look, it wasn't super small. In some of these states, Bloomberg got 18, 20%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's, I mean, and we talked last night about potentially how many of those numbers were people that would have, a nice percentage would have gone to Joe Biden anyway. So he's missing out on that, and he's probably imagining, oh man, what last night could have been even more if Mike Bloomberg wasn't there. So I get it. But I mean, anytime you get an endorsement from someone who's that opposite to any kind of Democratic values, it's putting like a bit of an anchor around your foot. Mm-hmm. It's dragging you down. Because now, like, oh, so you've been endorsed by Mike Bloomberg, the guy who's in Stop and Frisk. Do you agree with him on that? Because now you're carrying his points of view with you. Mm-hmm. And of course, the reason why he can't accept it is because no one's gonna start asking Joe Biden these questions.
Yeah. We have entered into a race that is different in a few fundamental ways, but one of those ways is probably not, and now the media will be highly critical of Joe Biden. Come the general election, they gotta seem balanced with Donald Trump, and they're gonna be bringing up a lot of this Hunter Biden stuff, so Bernie Sanders has to answer
for some supporters that go crazy online and say and do horrific things. Joe Biden should have to answer for people who have a name and were a presidential candidate for 2 weeks and threw a lot of money at people and has bribed candidates and politicians for his adult life.
Why not
answer for those people too?
Yeah, so look, we can have like an analysis of what was Bloomberg's actual strategy. And I know a lot of people are saying this was always the goal, to drop out and help Biden. Look, maybe in the end result, the result is the same. But when I'm analyzing the behavior of an incredibly arrogant billionaire, I generally think they're in it for themselves.
Oh, absolutely. Let's not get it twisted.
He could have spent the $500 million on Biden in the beginning if he wanted to. He wanted to be president, and he was a fool to think that he would be. Now, let's just touch base with what he spent. He spent, but depending on who you talk to, between $500 and $600 million for that run. And Christopher Ingram tweeted.
A jog.
A jog, yeah. It wasn't much of a run. Bit of a sprint. With a net worth of about $62 billion, Bloomberg spent about $500 million. That's equivalent to a typical American with $100,000 net worth spending $830. I don't know if I'd call that the typical American. So it's probably less than that. But another way to think of this, Bloomberg spent less than a third as much of his wealth as a middle class person who maxed out their individual campaign contribution.
Wow.
A tiny little bit. There was great commentary from this too, from one Kenneth Klippenstein, who said Bloomberg claims to hate socialism and yet his campaign redistributed huge amounts of billionaire money to poor young people. Curious. And they're referring to the digital influencers that signed on. They got paid really well to say that they like a man for a week and a half.
It's a pretty good gig.
They're still getting paid, by the way. Many of them are. Yeah. Remember, it was a full contract.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like the NFL where you have the contracts that aren't guaranteed. Mm-hmm. These contracts are guaranteed and they go through. And you know what? It's not a bad gig if you're just a person who maybe wasn't locked in on one particular can or didn't have a disdain for Bloomberg but knew he was a horrible choice. Go ahead and get your money and move on.
Exactly. And one person who's not quite moving on just yet, Donald Trump, who tweeted, "Mini Mike Bloomberg just quit the race for president." No, he quit the race. Why is it in? He quit. That's what the word means. He did.
You know what? Here's a suggestion. Sorry, I'm gonna let you finish, Doug. Donald needs to start replacing these quotes with like capitals, because sometimes he capitalizes the entire tweet, and that's a different problem. But if you want to emphasize a word, I know you can't do a bold
or italics.
Yeah. Maybe throw a capital on there.
Yeah.
Quotes here's don't do that.
Can we put that sentence up? Because here's the thing. You could make an argument for quotations around the word mini, the word Mike, it is a nickname after all, the word just, the word race, indeed even the word president. Quit is one of the only two words in that sentence that it does not make sense to put quotation marks around. But anyway, he's not wrong that he's gonna pour money into Sleepy Joe's campaign. And look, again, like I said yesterday, I am glad to now have the two sides very clearly identified so that they can go head to head. But in terms of money and everything, this is not bad news for Joe Biden.
Yeah, no, and we'll see where that pans out. I want to see where the money starts coming in. And it was mentioned before, which was always surprising to me that Joe, I've said it five times now, falling into last week, that he was potentially short on cash. Mm-hmm. I'm amazed by that, but yeah, there was a good explanation for that at least.
And it turns out it didn't matter because he didn't know that the campaign. The states still did well. Okay, very briefly, let's touch base with one more topic. Elizabeth Warren did not have the Super Tuesday that she was hoping to, even the hopes that she probably had yesterday. In her home state, she finished in third with 21.6% of the vote. A big gap between her and Bernie Sanders in second, let alone in first with Joe Biden, who trounced her there. That's her home state. She has to run for re-election eventually. And you know, total math, the delegates, let's bring up the count there after Super Tuesday. She's got 36, that's true. She's narrowly beating Pete Buttigieg now, but she is not even it's not even a third place at this point. And so I know this is like bullying or whatever, but that's the electoral math. It is a race between two candidates. That's all it is. And it is possible that that is starting to be accepted by her camp. Warren flew home to Boston late Tuesday after Detroit rally. She has no public events scheduled for the day. A senior campaign official told The Hill she would meet with staff to gauge her remaining chances. And her campaign manager, Roger Lau, sent out an email saying, "We are obviously disappointed. We're going to announce shortly that Elizabeth is talking to the team to assess the path forward." So does that mean that she's dropping out? Not necessarily. But the odds look like they have
not
gone up significantly.
Explicitly. Usually when you're meeting with staff, not usually, in cases that I've seen, when you're meeting with staff, somebody's writing the letter or writing the script. And you just have to make sure we have it right and edited it and make sure that we proofread it and everything and make sure everything is fine. Because I think it's coming. Mm-hmm. Where's the path?
And there's no path.
Yeah. Unless she's looking to regain on Super Saturday. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And look, if you're still a Warren fan, I know you're very angry at me for saying that there's no path. But you know, numerically, there is not a path. And so she has to decide what effect does she want to have on the race. The effect she's going to have is not to win it. That is gone. But what is she going to do? We'll see. I can make predictions. I will say that what I had been advising her camp to do for the past few weeks to salvage her reputation and goodwill of the left in the Democratic Party, That door is mostly closed at
it
this point.
It seems kind of tough at this point. Like, you know, a lot of times if someone is this level of a candidate and then they potentially have a place to be as, say, a running mate, which I don't think she's interested in, I gotta be honest. But even if she was, the of the two candidates that are ahead of her right now, I kind of think she doesn't have a lane with either one of them in that position.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, could Biden think that bringing her on as a VP would help him to get some of those supporters? Maybe. Maybe, but I wouldn't put her for Joe Biden's top 10 VP picks. Right. Maybe she makes like 10 to 8 or so. I mean, I was expecting they would come out with Kamala Harris announced this morning. Right. I think it's certainly, it's likely in the
I'm
wings.
I'm thinking that's it.
Yeah.
I was thinking that when Kamala dropped.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll see. Okay, so we've got much more on the race. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, a little bit more on Mike Bloomberg from one of the men who did perhaps second only to Elizabeth Warren the work in taking him down. Benjamin Dixon will be joining us after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Mike Bloomberg is now out after spending more than $500 million in a vanity project to become president. And look, a few people deserve credit for taking him out. Obviously, Elizabeth Warren dealt him some major blows two debates ago. But I would make the case that the person who deserves the second most credit is joining us now on the show. Journalist, progressive activist, and host of The Benjamin Dixon Show. Benjamin Dixon, welcome to The Damage Report.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Very glad to have you here. We've been wanting to talk to you for a while. This is the perfect topic, the perfect day, though. Were you surprised by the news this morning that Bloomberg was out?
No, not entirely. I mean, with all the other consolidations that took place, the other endorsements from Buttigieg, from Klobuchar, I expected this because, as we all know, Bloomberg got in this to stop Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Particularly their wealth tax. So once they saw they had a route to reroute outside of Bernie Sanders and they could go through Joe Biden, I figured this was coming soon.
So there's a good chance that our audience already knows, but in case they don't, you are the journalist that unearthed the Xerox audio of Mike Bloomberg talking about stop and frisk. And I'm gonna say, as honestly as I've heard him, he admits that it's discriminatory there. He just happens to like that. He likes how brutal, how cruel it is. So great work there. I'm just curious, like if we hadn't had that and a few of the other things that popped up, do you think that this race might have turned out very differently?
Yeah, I think it's possible that we could have faced the possibility of a Super Tuesday that coalesced around Michael Bloomberg. And, you know, I think that possibility to me, it's very real, right? There was no guarantee that Joe Biden was going to get the boost that he got. And then we would have been looking at the party coalescing around Michael Bloomberg as some type of inevitable nominee. And I think that would have been far worse. Not excited about what happened last night on Super Tuesday, but it could have been worse because I think it could have been Bloomberg in that spot.
So, yeah, I'm curious. I guess I know your opinion now. We were having a debate on our coverage yesterday, myself and Ben Mankiewicz, about who would have been the worst general election candidate. If it had to be Biden or if it had to be Bloomberg. And I personally believe Bloomberg would have been a far worse candidate and indeed president. Where do you come out on that?
Yeah, I think, well, it's hard to tell now. I think Joe Biden is going to be uniquely bad to run against Donald Trump for some key things. But I do believe that he would be a better president than Michael Bloomberg. Michael Bloomberg is a certified Republican oligarch with a track record of authoritarianism in New York. I just don't think we would have wanted to risk that as the nominee or the president.
Ben, this is JR. Hey,
JR, how's it going?
What's up, man? We were on Forever last night, and I guess we'll switch not directly on Mike Bloomberg, at least from my point of view, because at least he's gone. So as far as last night, there was a lot of, I guess, glum feelings. There's a mood, yeah. And there's clouds over it and all this stuff. There's rain clouds over everyone. Where's your take on how everything came out and where your energy and, I guess, positive approach still possibly is, or have you given up too?
No, I definitely haven't given up, man. There's a lot of miles to go. I am, I am impressed that the moderates and the conservatives in the party were able to consolidate, and they basically joined all their powers together and became Captain Planet, Captain Moderate, to beat up against Bernie Sanders. I am impressed with that willpower and that political machination, but they chose Joe Biden, mm-hmm. right? So if they were successful in the long run, they're going to go up against Donald Trump with Joe Biden, the man who last night mistook his wife for his sister and his sister for his wife. I mean, I don't know how much of a victory they should be celebrating today.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering also, so follow up on that. Do you think the numbers as far as the Democratic voters that they're expecting to get under Joe Biden, establishment and whatever percentage of progressives and liberals that also come on board to vote for him, if we're going on this scenario of if he wins, because again, I'm on the same vein, I don't think any of this is over. But right. If it's along that, do you think maybe they're playing, we don't need to try to pull any kind of at least last cycle Trump supporters, because we're just gonna throw this guy in. Enough people have seen 4 years of Trump and are disgusted by it, even people who voted for him. So we don't need to do much. We can have a guy who has blanks on stage and during campaign events, and it's okay, people overlook it because anything is better than Trump. Do you think they're banking on that?
I think there's half and half. I think half the people who genuinely believe that Joe Biden stands a chance of stopping Trump, I think they genuinely believe that. But I do think you have some establishment players who never intend on beating, they don't need to beat Trump to preserve their power, right? And they know right. putting Joe Biden up against Donald Trump is almost elder abuse, right? This is not to be ageist, but he is obviously showing sign of cognitive decline, and we don't want to talk about it, but we absolutely need to talk about it, because when it comes to those three debates, he is going to get devastated by Donald Trump. And I think that there are people in the party who know that, but so long as they would rather lose to Trump than to win with Biden. Win with Bernie Sanders, that is.
Yeah, I promise, I'm gonna let John get back on his show.
It's but quite all right, we're co-hosting here.
So when it comes to things like that, because Donald Trump also doesn't have a grasp on reality, doesn't have a grasp on policy or any real accomplishments that he can actually expand on in debates. So if you have two people who have this problem, have these limitations, really, where is it that Donald Trump is going to decimate Joe Biden when he doesn't have much of an information or an agenda base to really decimate him on?
That's a great question. But the thing is the bar, Donald Trump's unique superpower, his uncanny superpower, is the fact that his supporters will support him no matter what. It doesn't matter how much he embarrasses himself, they are going to support him. It doesn't matter how much he lies, they're going to support him. So in a debate, you also have to take in consideration the ease of being hate-filled or being silly or being debased. Donald Trump doesn't have the standard of presidential, of having to be presidential. He could just go into the mud. And it really is not difficult. He doesn't have to remember policy when he could just remember his bigotry. And his mm-hmm. audience is going to reward him all the same.
Yeah. So look, there's a lot more that we want to talk about in a bit about the race, including Elizabeth Warren, how we see the race shaping out. But one last question on Mike Bloomberg, though. He has already endorsed Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. How concerned are you for the future of the race about the possibility that we're now seeing not only a huge set of staff and offices for Joe Biden in all these states it's already set up, but possibly $1 or $2 or $6 or $800 million in anti-Sanders ads.
Yeah, I think it was inevitable. I think we idealistically underestimated how hard the establishment was going to fight against Bernie Sanders. Michael Bloomberg says that he was going to spend that money, I guarantee you he's going to spend it right now. That cash is going to come out right now. And so the odds are against us, but it's definitely not over. I think grassroots organizing outdoes spending money, as evidenced by the audio clip that we found that set Michael Bloomberg back. I mean, it was an alley-oop. Elizabeth Warren definitely slammed. She definitely dunked on him several times in the debate. But that just goes to show you sometimes money isn't everything in politics.
Yeah. Hopefully. Everyone stick around. Benjamin's going to be with us after this. So after a Super Tuesday that did not necessarily go the way it looked like it was going to a few days ago for Bernie Sanders, what comes next? Well, we're going to have a little debate about the near term, but in the immediate term, we do know that apparently, breaking news, he's going to hold a press conference in Burlington, Vermont at 2 p.m., which is actually very soon local time. And so Benjamin Dixon, host of the Benjamin Dixon Show, joins us once again. I am seeing some social media buzz about the possibility that maybe it's a big endorsement. I know that you might just be finding out about this now. What do you make about this press conference announcement?
We will see. I mean, I would be surprised if Elizabeth Warren is going to go ahead and endorse him. It would be a welcome endorsement. I think it would be the kind of push that he needs. Quite frankly, we all need. But I just would have to, I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, I guess. This is the sort of morning where I am just looking for some good news, I guess, and we'll see. I know it would be pretty shocking at this point if one particular endorsement did come in.
Can I on that line, because this is speculation when people want Elizabeth Warren to drop out before Super Tuesday. Directly to Ben, because I've talked to everyone else here about it. Do you think that's a good move, and how much would that really accelerate things with Bernie Sanders? If Elizabeth Warren was on board. With Bernie Sanders.
Oh, no. I mean, that would be huge, right? Then we could finally have the conversation about the divide that has been in the Democratic Party forever. It would literally be the progressive movement in total against the conservative, moderate, centrist movement in the Democratic Party. So I would love it, to be honest with you.
How do you feel hardcore Bernie Sanders supporters would respond? Because there's been a little bit of anger and distrust and pushback because of some of the things Elizabeth Warren has done, because everyone's hyper because of how important this election is.
Right. I would just say, just be willing to accept this information, right? Accept it and not reject it. It's a good truth, right? It's a good thing that is happening. It helps you towards your goals. So sometimes accepting good things that help you towards your goal means to just kind of bite your tongue a little bit. It's okay. It's okay. Hold back. It'll be worthwhile to have the endorsement.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean, like, if you are, I think, rightfully frustrated by some of the attacks that she's launched against Bernie Sanders, doesn't mean that if she endorses him, suddenly the slate's clean and she's cool.
Right.
But it is helpful to have more support on Bernie's side. So I think those are separate conversations that we can have both. Benjamin, I am curious, though, in terms of overall campaign strategy, regardless of what happens today for Bernie Sanders, the race is different than it looked like it was going to be a week ago.
Yeah.
It's very tight in terms of the delegate count. It looks like we will end up with a 1-versus-1 race. If you were advising the Bernie Sanders camp, what are some of the suggestions you would make to them about how they should adapt to the way the race is evolving?
Yeah, so I probably would catch a lot of flack for this, but I'm going to say, put your money in converting older voters. The young vote has not, and when we say young, I think under 29, I think it was like 10% in South Carolina turnout. It is ridiculously low. And I don't know that we can count on them to help us win these primaries. Now, this is no, I mean, I think they're a revolutionary generation. I think they're more left than us, but in terms of getting up and coming to the polls, they haven't done that so far. So I think one of the things they're gonna have to do is try to convert as many boomers as possible, which may be the most difficult thing they ever try.
Yeah, so I guess I'm curious about that, because as many people have pointed out, much of the democratic socialism of the Bernie Sanders movement is trying to take the situation that the blessed elderly have, thanks to programs like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, those sorts of things, or Medicare specifically, and just say, hey, maybe we could all have that. But the thing is, those older votes, those older voters already do have that. So yeah. How do you think you should go about trying to get some of them to take a look at him when they've historically been a little bit scared of his approach? They've been told that he's too radical.
Yeah, so this is like the nuclear option, right? I think we have to start appealing to our parents and our grandparents by letting them know, look, the reason we're broke, the reason we have to always ask you for money, the reason we're still staying in your house, we're in your basement, whatever the case would be, the reason most kids are not doing as good or definitely not doing better than their parents, it's a systemic problem. Right. And if you want your kids to keep living in your basement, if you want your kids, that's the only way that you can really appeal to boomers. I know it's kind of tongue in cheek and I know it's kind of cringy, but they really have that view of younger generations, particularly those boomers who are established. Right. You have plenty of radical boomers who are farther left than all of us. Right. But then there are a lot who make up the establishment, and they have this certain condescending gaze when they look at us in terms of our accomplishments. But there's a reason your kid and your neighbor's kid and the grandkids across this country. It's systemic, right? And we're fighting against forces that we can finally address with the presidency of Bernie Sanders.
You know, and I'm also curious. So that was sort of for the Bernie camp. For people like us who have shows, maybe people watching this that communicate on social media and in real life, we're looking at a possible race where Biden is about to get, you know, like more money than God has spent on ads. Some of it supporting him, probably most of it attacking Bernie Sanders. The media has so far not done their job in properly vetting Joe Biden. They let the whole "I was arrested in South Africa" thing effectively dissipate after an hour or two. And so how do we make sure that people know who these two candidates really are?
Right, I think we just have to apply the pressure like we would anyone else, right? And I try to make sure people understand, listen, when you listen to my show, you're going to eventually come across episodes where I disagree and I'm critiquing Bernie Sanders. Now, if you know I'm going to critique Bernie Sanders and I even critique and correct myself, you should expect that we are going to come with the full force of our vetting power against any other candidate, right? There are no favorites. This isn't about a cult of personality and protecting your guy, because what happens is whatever is overlooked in the primaries will be exploited by Donald Trump in the general election. So you should be thanking us.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I know we talked about this a little bit earlier on, but I have what I think is a very good view of how Bernie Sanders would do, for instance, on the debate stage against Donald Trump. I would be very comfortable with that. We all have concerns about Joe Biden there. I mean, so like looking forward, and like we've said a million times, it is an over by a long shot. If it were Joe Biden, tell me a little bit about your feelings about the general election and how that might play out.
Listen, I mean, you have to ask yourself a couple of key questions. Is Joe Biden as good of a candidate as Hillary Clinton? No, he's not. Does he have a movement behind him that will go knock on doors and canvass? No, he doesn't. Is he actually going to be able to convert enough Republicans to actually make up for the depressed vote that he's going to encourage, right? No, he won't. And so no one can make a logical explanation, a reason to say why he is going to perform better against Donald Trump than Hillary Clinton did. And then the flip side of it is Donald Trump supporters are motivated. Like, they're going out into the primaries, they're voting, they're showing up to his rallies, they're still buying his merchandise, they have fresh and clean Make America Great Again hats for every occasion. So you really are underestimating the force that's behind Donald Trump if you think that you can go into this general election with someone who does not have an inspirational bone in his body.
Ben, let's address another one of the arguments that I think the establishment, at least on the Democratic side, has been pushing as far as the fear of Bernie Sanders. So they think we need an establishment person because we have to worry about the down ballot elections, because we need support in Congress in order to have a president do anything. If you have a President Sanders that has a Republican Congress still headed by Mitch McConnell, and then they're also even fear-mongering on potentially flipping the House back to Republicans, they're saying that Biden is the safer choice. Where do you see that argument, first off, in its validity? And number two, is Bernie Sanders' potential in being in that spot, does it really hurt down ballot candidates?
Right. Okay, let's start there, right? It doesn't hurt down ballot because it's a good assumption that you're going to get different people to come to the polls to support someone who is an outsider like Bernie Sanders. And that's the difference, right? In the general election, you're looking for that marginal voter who maybe would have voted, maybe not, or that voter who says that, oh, finally they're going to do something for us, and so I'll show up. Because, I mean, we really are at, what, about 50% of the population that actually participates in the voting process. So in order to win, the Democrats have to overperform with their base, but they also have to pick up some of those marginal voters on the edges. And Joe Biden is not going to inspire that. Bernie Sanders would inspire that because of his message that speaks to the material conditions of people, of everyday people. Now, to the first question, I honestly think that kind of sums it up, right? So yeah. Joe Biden is going to be a shortfall. He's not going to inspire. And Bernie Sanders, he absolutely would inspire. So this idea that he's not going to or that he's going to hurt the down ballot tickets, it's really just the establishment pushing this red scare of him being a socialist, a democratic socialist. They're still peddling this when the data is coming out, is showing us that the population, they're coming to terms with the word socialism, and they're definitely coming to terms with Medicare for all.
What do you do to calm the fears of those establishment voters, you know, because they're buying into it. And I get he may get those offshoot voters, but then the hardcore ones that you mentioned, I maybe even answered it earlier when you were talking about he has to pick up the boomer population. But and because those are people that are potentially not will not vote down ballot. At least that's what I'm saying. I guess I'm portraying their question.
Their intention. Yeah. So if we think that they won't participate down ballot, then we really have to ask the question if we have irreconcilable differences with the Democratic Party, right? If there is a generational divide, there's somewhat of a racial divide, but I think it's really ideological, pure and simple. If you believe that the government should do something for the people, then you're going to be voting for Bernie Sanders in this case. Right. If you believe everything is fine and just the way it is, you'll be voting for Joe Biden. And the reason I put it in terms of that is because if you really explore where these people get these ideas from, as far as Joe Biden's electability is coming straight from mainstream media. They've been indoctrinated. They have been subject to all of the hundreds of millions of dollars of free advertisement earned media that the media gave Joe Biden over the weekend. I mean, they believe it as a statement of faith without any evidence. I don't know how you deprogram that. We just kind of have to decide whether or not we have irreconcilable differences at that point.
Yeah. Really fast, I just want to end on what might potentially be a bit of a positive point. I'm casting about and I'm thinking, what are some big things that could shake up this race? And the first thing I think of is a two-man debate between Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden. Oh, yeah. We've talked about Joe Biden versus Donald Trump. How does Biden stand up when there's no one to hide behind on that stage and it's just him and Bernie? Yeah.
So in terms of the audience, in terms of the listening audience, what we're going to find is that we've changed the paradigm of Democratic primaries. And what I mean by that is there's going to be celebration from the audience, from the establishment, from centrists. The more conservative that Joe Biden sounds, the more he rejects the vision of Medicare for all, college for all, canceling student debt, the more conservative he is, the more they're going to celebrate him. And I think that that's going to shift, kind of fundamentally shift the nature of the Democratic Party going forward. In most primaries, you go to the left in order to win the primary, or you go to your base. Like if you're in the right, you go to the far right to satisfy your base. Here in the Democratic primary, we see you're going to have to go towards the right and become more conservative. And I think that that's going to really kind of delineate how good or bad the debates are. Like, it's how much will the Democratic Party base accept the more conservative values of Joe Biden? I think they're going to accept it with open arms. Now, on the flip side, will Joe Biden have the cognitive capacity to go three rounds with our guy? I honestly don't believe he will.
Okay, well, we have like 2 weeks to find out. I think March 15th is the next debate. Benjamin Dixon, journalist and host of the Benjamin Dixon Show. Thank you so much. Had a lot of fun talking politics with you.
Thanks for having me. My pleasure.
We'll see you in just a few. So coming out of Super Tuesday, I have a few issues with the votes that were cast, but I also have an issue with the difficulty that many people had in casting those votes in the first place. There were incredibly long lines here in California in some places. I was lucky to go to a polling place where I was able to get through in less than 30 minutes. Some people had to wait literally hours, late into the night. It was even worse in Texas. Election officials in the Houston area were forced to send in additional voting machines as thousands of people reportedly waited for up to 5 hours to vote at one station. I know it's not this simple, but my advice would be if you have a cool storage place of a bunch of extra machines, send them out for the election. I know that's not how it actually works, but people had to wait a long time. Take a look at this guy. This is a last voter at the Texas Southern University. Hervis Rogers waited 7 hours to vote in America at a university.
We can't keep talking about how we have the best system in the world. We can't keep talking about how we're this democratic juggernaut, and we need to teach the world how to really how to carry on their government if we can't carry it out. So you have extra voting machines that you had to emergency rush in because there wasn't enough. And there's not hair pulling outrage in the country about it. If you think about it, if you go to your local grocery store and you see about 7 to 10 employees walking around not doing anything, and then there's two cashiers open and there's lines down each aisle from each one, you know what you're gonna do? You're gonna say, what's going on? Somebody needs to get some cashiers in the front. How are you guys running this business? You see all these lines, we're waiting forever, get someone up here. And you'd be justified in saying so. Now, I've seen people do that and I was like, yeah, that guy's kind of off the rails, he's unhinged, he's mad. But I get his point. You'd get mad about just checking out from the grocery store if you have to wait for 30 minutes. That's a long time. Imagine standing in line for 7 hours to vote for a leader for leadership in your country that is supposed to be the best in the world at this. But you have extra employees, quote unquote, cash registers and cashiers hanging out, not doing anything. Why is this the case? Maybe it's on purpose? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe. Like, look, the having to deploy the emergency ones, okay, maybe you have a cache so that, like, depending on which one fails, you send it there. But the fact that it failed was not really a surprise. Texas has closed 750 entire polling locations. I'm not even talking about pulled some of the machines from a location. They've shut down, getting on towards 1,000 polling locations in the last 8 years. The state had one polling place for every 4,000 residents back in 2012. That number almost doubled by 2018. Because I think that we can all agree that in Texas in 2012, a lot of people in Texas were saying, it's too easy to vote. Like, I'm just in and out. Like, come on, give me a challenge or something. And they achieved that. And so what's shocking is that the 50 counties that saw the highest growth in Black and Latino population had 542 sites close in those 6 years. While the 50 counties with the lowest Black and Latino population growth saw just 34 closures. And that came despite the population in those top 50 counties rising by 2.5 million people, while the other 50 saw their population fall by 13,000.
That makes sense.
That makes all the sense in the world if you are a racist that hates the idea of democracy.
I'm telling you, these things, and actually, it's disappointing that both parties aren't outraged by this. Well, I mean, I understand why one party isn't. But so the other party that's supposed to be open to more voters coming in isn't making this the number one issue. It has to be what it is, but maybe they're content with it as well. Or when we talk about the Voting Rights Act doesn't need to be strengthened or actually get stripped and becomes toothless because, oh, it's okay, the states will handle it. We've gotten by that problem. Yeah. Well, we've recreated the problem that actually never went away. But if you want to act like we've gotten by it, well, you're making it happen again. And then who's to say, who's going to be the one to actually bring this issue back up?
Yeah, and look, for years now, I've been frustrated by the fact that the way I described it on Twitter was we have one party that is engaged in a decades-long war to kill democracy, and we have another party that's standing on the sidelines like, they're apathetic. Technically, they probably support people voting. But when they had a supermajority in the Senate, what did they do to make sure that we could vote in the future? By the way, I want you to really think about that because it's not just, like you could say that for virtually any topic. When they had the power to do virtually anything they wanted, why didn't they use it? But in this case, it's not just that it's the right thing to do. It's not just that they call themselves Democrats but don't seem to care about democracy. It would help them pragmatically to win elections in the future and they still didn't do it. So why the lack of action? Why is it the case that this can continue to develop, not in the 70s, 80s, 90s, but up to and including 2018, they're still doing this. And the Democrats for the most part are like, yeah, that's unfortunate. Man, oh, that Trump, he's a bad guy.
You know, maybe I like to do reverse on people that are very, like don't care about other people's rights. So hey, maybe we should start having a push. Not enough old rich white people have enough opportunity to vote. I want to give them more of an opportunity to vote. We keep closing polling locations in white rich areas. What's the matter with this country? We need to make a major push because white folks are losing their rights to vote. Let's just keep pushing this false narrative and maybe they'll point out and say, hey, you guys, old rich white folks don't have any hurdles in voting. Mm-hmm. Like, that's right.
That is right. Yeah, it's nice. It's nice. Okay, we're gonna take one last break. When we come back, let's see what's going on with Jeff Sessions. So you probably heard that following last night, Donald Trump is attacking Joe Biden. He's in a good mood, but Joe Biden's not the only one he's attacking. You remember Jeff Sessions? Jeff Sessions ran an election last night, and he actually came out second in the Alabama Senate Republican primary to Tommy Tuberville. So now look, that does not mean that he's done. They're gonna have a runoff election right now. But Jeff Sessions not only, of course, wanted to come in first, but he was hoping to win this thing outright, and that did not happen. Which is bad news for Jeff Sessions, particularly because Donald Trump was paying attention and tweeted at him, "This is what happens to someone who loyally gets appointed Attorney General of the United States and then doesn't have the wisdom or courage to stare down and end the phony Russian witch hunt, recuses himself on first day in office, and the Mueller scam begins."
Surprised he didn't put quotes on first day.
Or first. Or day.
Or Sessions, or the.
Or the comma. I don't know. But I love that like Trump was just waiting around to like pounce on Jeff Sessions, a guy who he hates as much as I hate Trump for the crime of recusing himself, which of course he should have done.
Okay, so this is the same guy. What kind of man is this? Let's not forget. And also the same guy who was one of the first to support Donald Trump before everyone else was.
One of the first.
When we first said Jeff Sessions is crazy when he did that. Mm-hmm. But then, so fast forward to now, when Donald Trump is tweeting how he loyally appointed him to the guy who got on his knees consistently, even after he called him less of a man and said, "I really hope the president, for this particular election as well, I trust the president will support me." Apparently, yeah, you don't know who the guy you've been working for.
Yeah, you want an example of that? So not only did the former attorney general say last year that he, quote, certainly going to hope Trump endorses him, but he also claimed the president had told him he would at the very least hold his fire as Sessions tries to reclaim his old seat. Quote, "He said he's not going to attack me in the race," Sessions said during a Fox News interview. I don't even doubt that he said that, but you believed him? Oh my God.
I hated the term when he said, "What kind of man is this?" Because that, of course, denotes the fact that only men can have courage and stand up and do things like that. So that's Trump's first thought process. But this feeds into that. Yeah, what kind of courageous person is this? We'll just give it to him, forget man or woman. Jeff Sessions continues to grovel and not see the reality of the situation. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump has shown this over and over and over again. It's like there's no other outlet that these folks have rather than to continue to go back to the guy who keeps slapping you across the face.
Yeah.
After this, we'll see again. And Jeff Sessions decides to maybe do something about it, because right now he's inflicting pain on your potential runoff against Tuberville. Yeah. That's his plan. So I mean, at one point you got to stand up, because he can't wait to gloat if you lose in this general in this runoff and go, "Ha, told you, he lost because of me."
Yeah,
he wants it to be about him, like always.
Yeah, and there's two things. One, like I love the fact that he honestly thought Trump would not attack. Like if. As the blade slides into your back from Donald Trump, there's only one thing you can reasonably say. Yeah, that's about right. And
a little higher, please.
I thought it would be higher. And look, the only other thing, there is a little bit of good news for Jeff Sessions. Trump's view of you, it fluctuates so much that if Sessions wins and pledges loyalty again, Trump will be talking about how he's the best person in the world. Until he ever votes against Trump, in which case he will then be the devil himself.
I actually really want Sessions to suck up to really see what Trump will do. If he'll stick with the, "Oh, I hate that guy," because he can't get over the recusal. So he can't get beyond that, because that's in the past. It's never.
He has been talking about it for years. That's true.
He can't get over it. So yeah. I wonder if the reversal back to kissing, kneeling down on him again will allow him to maybe switch it back. I don't see it. Mm-hmm. He's too petty. The president is way too petty.
He wants his vote, though. I don't know. We'll see. He said nice things about Mitt Romney before, you know, most recently. So anyway, Jeff Sessions, welcome back to reality and to American politics. This is the party that you want to be a part of.
Let's not forget, this is the seat that Jeff Sessions held before he went into the administration of course. So this is, it's not like this is some extra seat or some democratically held seat. This is Alabama.
Yeah.
So he was there already. This is his seat.
And by the way, look honestly, if you're a Republican, look at what being supportive of Donald Trump has gotten you. He left a cushy spot in the Senate to work for Donald Trump. He spent 2.5 years getting attacked brutally publicly by Donald Trump. Then he decides to go back to his seat and Trump turns on him to try to get Tuberville elected.
I think Sessions' son was mad about it. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, look, that was obviously a big show. We want to thank Benjamin Dixon for joining us once again. Yeah. Very invigorating conversation there. Jared Jackson, as always, thank you
next
for making
Wednesday.
It here Wednesday.
More big news.
God only knows what's going to happen then. But anyway, yeah, thank you for joining me. I got my live podcast taping for Politicon. We'll have details on that as the day proceeds, but we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.